All right, if you have your Bible this morning, if you would find 1 Kings 19. 1 Kings 19 is between 2 Samuel and 2 Kings. A little hard to find. And I'm going to do a little bit different this morning than I normally do. So just bear with me. I have tried my best to get God to get me out of this message, and He just won't let me get out of it. I tried this morning again. You got to listen carefully because I'm going to say some things two different ways, and you're going to say, what does he mean? But just try to listen to me, and I'll try to explain it as I go. 1 Kings 19 is about Elijah. I want to kind of introduce it. This is a little bit different by talking about 1 Kings 18 and tell you what is going on before we get to 19. And what is happening. What is happening in 1 Kings 18 is that Elijah has confronted Ahab, the king of Israel at that time, and the false prophets, about 450 of one sect and about 400 of another one, 850 prophets. 3 years before this, Elijah had predicted that Israel would have no rain, and he was mocked for that, and now they're in a confrontation. And so in the midst of that confrontation, Elijah told them to call on their gods, little G-O-D-S, their gods, to call down the fire and brimstone on the earth. And all day long, they did that on this side while Elijah was over here probably reading the funny papers. I mean, he was just sitting there watching them and knew that it wouldn't happen. And then Elijah took a bull and cut it up, and a sacrifice and cut it up, and put it on 12 stones, illustrating the 12 tribes of Judah. And then he had three different times. I got to ask my little granddaughter about this last night, how many barrels of water was on it, and she had a good guess, 962. It wasn't that many. It did it three times. Well, four barrels would be 12 times. And this soaked the wood, the sacrifice and all. And then Elijah called the fire down from heaven, and it hit all around him and just lapped all that up and dried it all up. And all these people that was watching this, which had been following Baal and these other prophets, or other unknown gods or unspeakable gods or whatever you want to call them, realized that they were following the wrong God, and so they turned on those prophets and killed them. And Elijah went back to the mountain then, and he prayed. God relieved the drought. And guess what? It started raining. And then Ahab was going back to Jezreel, and he was in a chariot. And God gave Elijah enough strength to outrun him, and he was in a chariot back to Jezreel. So see the strength he had. Great spiritual victory. Great victory in the God, in the Lord. A lot of power, a lot of mind in God. But when we get to chapter 19, things change a little bit. I think I call this greater gloom. It could be fearless or fearful. Elijah becomes fearful. But I want to talk just a minute about the characters of this story, because I want you to understand kind of who they are. You know, we are humans, and we have frailties a lot of times, and maybe we can understand a little bit where Elijah's going to be in chapter 19 than he was in chapter 18. Let's talk about Ahab just a minute. Now, I printed a bunch of stuff out. I'm not going to read all of this. Elijah was an evil king, one of the most evil kings in Israel's history. All right, he was very evil. He did evil things in the eyes of the Lord. His downfall, he was married to an evil, wicked woman named Jezebel, and we'll talk about her in a minute. He devoted himself to the worship of false gods as he worshiped them. He was weak, he was pitiful, and he was a whiner. He just whined about everything. You'll see that in just a moment. And then there's Jezebel. Jezebel, if you talk about Jezebel, she was Ahab's wicked wife. She was the worshiper of Baal. She brought Baal into Israel. for them to worship her and adore the kingdom. And she killed all the prophets of God. She murdered them. She would set people up, innocent people up, and deceive them and kill them. She was power hungry, and she married this weak, pitiful king that she dominated. Now, anybody named their kid, their child Jezebel, their daughter Jezebel? Y'all met her. Have you met her, Jezebel? Y'all don't think that's funny. Have you met Jezebel before? My admin, I take certain things off her. There are certain things I don't want her to do. And if we have a hard call, I don't want her to necessarily make it. And one day, recently, she said, we need to call this lady. And she gave me a file. She was standing at my desk, and I was reading this file and looking at her. I said, I'm not going to call this lady. She said, why? I said, I'm afraid I'll make her mad and she'll cut me. That's Jezebel. That's Jezebel. In the South, she'd cut you. She was a wicked woman. Now, some of you are looking at your wife. You're not married to Jezebel, I promise you, okay? And then there's the prophet Elijah. There's the prophet Elijah. He's an interesting character. God used him in an important time in the life of Israel. He opposed this wicked king. His ministry marked the beginning of the Baal worship, and he began to oppose that. And he demonstrated these victories in God on one side, and on the other side, most writers believe that he went to the death of depression, and I'll kind of hit that a little bit. He went to the death of depression. And he was on a mountainside at one time. He was high as he did this, as he stood up to Ahab and all those false prophets. He had a spiritual victory, and a lot of times when you have a spiritual victory, if you're not careful, you'll have a letdown. And so he faced this Jezebel. He faced these prophets, and he used the mighty act of God. Now look at 1 Kings chapter 19 and verse 1, and look what happens after all this has gone on. Now Ahab, see, he's whining, told Jezebel, that wicked wife, all that Elijah had done and how he killed all the prophets with the sword. Then Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah saying, so may the gods do to me even more if I do not make your life as the life of one of them by tomorrow at this time. So, she comes to Elijah and says, by tomorrow at this time, and what does he do? Look at verse 3. And he was afraid. He just killed 850 prophets. He just confronted Ahab, and now he is afraid of one woman, of Jezebel. And he arose and ran for his life to Beersheba, which belonged to Judea, and left his servant there. Elijah is high. Elijah had everything going. But notice something. His emotions got the best of him, and they overwhelmed him, and it caused his spiritual life to go into chaos. It caused him to do what he shouldn't have done. Now, I'm going to make a statement, and you listen to me. Our emotions are part of our humanity. They are real. They are part of who we are. They have emotions, have their place because God gave them to us. And when we have these emotions, we either can suppress them or explore them. And if we suppress them, they will be expressed the wrong way. But if we explore them, and have God to deal with them, they'll come out the right way. You ever tried to hold a beach ball down in water? You can't do it for so long. And what is it going to do? It's going to pop up. So we need to recognize that there are times that we are human. And our emotions will overcome us if we are not careful. And it will cause us spiritual chaos and a spiritual battle, and Satan will use that against us. Three simple things, three simple points out of this text as I read through it. The first one is this. Elijah, let me say it a different way. We are exhausted by, you fill in the blank. Elijah was exhausted by the ministry that he had just done. There's a frightening statistic out there that says 75% of our pastors are in either being in depression or in depression right now because of ministry. But you fill in the blank. I am exhausted because work. I am exhausted because of school. I am exhausted because all these kids running around in my house. I'm exhausted because of life. Life's thrown me a curve. I'm just exhausted. And if we're not careful, we'll get exhausted. And when we get exhausted, we get these emotions come up, and we begin to think these things that's not true, and we begin to do a lot of things that we don't need to do. So what are you exhausted by this morning? The second thing I want you to see, and you saw that from the text that he was exhausted, is that we have to respond to the threat. Look at verse 4. What did he do? He ran. But he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness, and he came and sat under a juniper tree and requested for himself that he might die. Look what he says. It is enough now, O Lord. Take my life, for I'm not better, any better than my father or fathers. We react to the way we're exhausted, and when those emotions come up, we react to that. So what did Elijah do? Elijah said, you know what? I don't care, Jezebel. God raises the dead. God just wiped out all your prophets. I stand strong on God. God is much greater than you. Is that what he said, right? I would expect him to say that. But he did not say that. He went to the juniper tree, and this is what he said. He said, God, I am done. You ever said that? I'm just done. I'm exhausted. I've had enough. I've had enough. I can't do this. You ever been there? I just had enough. And his emotions begin to override his life. And when begin to override his life, what he did, it got into his spiritual side of his life. And it caused him spiritual chaos. And we will do the same thing if we are not careful. It will change our perspective. We'll get exhausted. We get overwhelmed. And we lose perspective. And that was Elijah. He ran. Why? Why? Why did he run? He was still a man of God. He was in chaos. He was exhausted. He was depleted. He was crushed. He started telling himself this story. What was the story? The story was this. It's not enough. I've done what my father's done. I've done all I can. And he began to tell this story in his head. And he began to believe it. And he began to believe that story as he was sharing it. Now, how do we do that? Well, let me give you a good example. We were going up the road, and my mother and Janet was in the car, and a couple of the grandkids, and they said something about being hot in the back of the car. So I was fooling with the thermostat to try to get it cooler in the rear seat, and rear seats where they could get a little cooler. And while I was fooling with it, I ran off the road. Now, this is my mother's and Janet's story, okay? This is between their ears. You cannot convince them any different. This is what happened. If you asked them right now, they're going to tell you this is what happened. I ran off the road. I ran up a pine tree, like the Dukes of Hazzard, jumped it, spun 14 times in the road, almost hit six cars. That's their perspective. They'll tell you, if you ask them, that's stuck in their head, that I almost crashed a car. They'll tell you that happened, okay? Maybe not in those words, but they'll tell you. I'm exaggerating the words a little bit, okay? Now I'll tell you the truth. This is what happened. I ran off the road. And what happens if you jerk the car back too quick if you run off the road? Somebody tell me. You're not careful, you'll flip. That's reading all these 15 passenger vans flip. So I eased it back on the road. When I did, it went kind of like that, and I kept right on. But in their mind, we almost wrecked. See? Somebody over there said, we did. You cannot persuade them. That's their perspective. You bring that on the spiritual side, and you will start telling yourself things. People don't like me. God don't like me. God don't want me. People don't want me down there at their church. I can't do anything. And you start doing this thing, what counselors call storing, and you tell yourself these stories all day long, and you will begin to believe them, and they will overwhelm you emotionally, and it will get on your spiritual side, and you will run for your life. And we all do it. Don't look so pious, you do it too. I was doing some reading on this just to see, and there was a story in the book that I was reading. It was about a man that came in, and his wife had a hotel bill for $49, I think it was. And she jumped all over him. Who you having an affair with? Who you running around with? I can't believe you're doing this to me. And he said, he basically said, slow down here. Let's talk this through. I don't know what you're talking about. And come to find out, when they tracked it down, they'd eat at a Mexican restaurant close to this motel, and the owner owned the Mexican restaurant and the motel both, and they'd run the credit card slip through the motel. But she had it in her head. So I decided, we were going down the road. I had about 2 hours where I was preaching last Sunday. We were going down the road, and I decided to tell Janet that story and see how she would react. And she, like I would, she was over the top, We start telling each other these stories. Well, I was telling our team that Monday about it, and one of the ladies in there said, over the top, nothing. I'd been at that man's office that day, and his secretary had not been in front of me, if it had been my husband. So we start storying. We start telling ourselves these things, and a lot of times they're not true, and it becomes perspective, and it's hard to get rid of it, and then our emotions take over, and then it gets into our spiritual walk, and all of a sudden we're standing back from God, and we're not doing what God can do, and we become despaired and even depressed. Listen, I want to be careful right here. A lot of people believe that Elijah was depressed. I have no reason to believe that he wasn't. Depression is a serious thing. It is very serious. I have a buddy that's been, he and I have done a lot of ministry. He's been depressed for 3 years. And they cannot figure out what's wrong. And I have a friend, his daughter was raised in a Christian home. She'd been depressed for 5 years. There's not a day, she is a sweet little girl. There's not a day in her life that she doesn't contemplate suicide. Not one day in her life. Wouldn't that be miserable? It's real. And I would say to you, if you're depressed, you need to get help. You need to make sure you go to counseling. You need to do certain things. You need to do right the opposite of what Satan's telling you to do. Because he's telling you to go home, sit down, and give up. Got to be careful about telling these stories, and it'll do. We'll start storing, and it will cause that despair and that depression, and it'll cause us to be overwhelmed, and it'll get into our spiritual walk, and even though we're a person of God. And then somebody will say this, you just got to trust God. You just got to trust Jesus. Most of us grew up in a church culture where here's the pill, just trust. Here's a pill you take to have faith, to just trust Jesus. Now, don't understand, I believe in trusting Jesus. But if I cut my hand off with a saw and you just tell me to trust Jesus, I'm going to look at you like you're another planet. Why don't you throw a towel at me to help stop the bleeding or something? And sometimes that's just our answer, just trust Jesus. We have to trust Jesus. But it's more than a cliche. And you may not have been there. You may not be that person that's overwhelmed spiritually and emotionally. So let's look at the third thing, a part of this story, receiving God's message and grace and mercy as we do this. You see, we start playing these games, and like Elijah, he would begin to play this game. And so we play this game, and we get emotionally overwhelmed, and we come to church, and we act like we're so spiritual, and we got it all together, and we're afraid to say, I'm not okay. It's sad that we live in a world when if somebody says they're not okay, we don't know what to do with them. But we're afraid to say, I'm not okay, and instead of trying to say, God, I'm overwhelmed, God, I'm having all these emotions, and God, they're overcoming me. They're overtaking me. We just come in and we say, oh, God, I'm so spiritual. I'm singing the songs and I'm doing what you want us to do. And I'm not overwhelmed. And we deny it in ourselves. And it doesn't help God. It doesn't allow God to use us and rebuild us and renew us. And we start this story. It's funny about the story. We become despaired and discouraged, and we start the story, and it causes us to be despaired and discouraged, and we do more story, and we start to be despaired and discouraged, and we get down and out, and these emotions overcome us, and we have nowhere to go when we should go to God, when we really should trust the Lord. And not just have a cliche that says, trust the Lord. I read this, God used simple things. There's a couple things that really, out of ordinary, but God just used simple things with Elijah. He just read it. So let's read the story and let's talk about some of the things he used. Verse 4, but he himself went a day's journey in the wilderness, and he came and sat up under a juniper tree. Now, I looked that up. I tried to deal with that, the juniper tree. I tried to figure out there's something holy about a juniper tree. If you look it up, it's just a little bush. And no, there's nothing holy about it. Yes, there's something holy about it. No, there's nothing holy about it because it's there, but it's holy because God used it. And what God did is God gave Elijah, you had to know where he's at. He's in the middle of the desert. Gave Elijah a place for a shade, a place to sit down, relax, reflect about who it was and what was going on in his life, and to gain some strength because he's about to go on a journey. A juniper tree. And look at this. And when he requested for himself that he might die, he said, it's enough, O Lord, for my life. I'm not better than my father. He was ready to give up. Now, I missed one that I wanted to say something about. I missed the servant. Go back to the verse. I walked right back. And he was afraid and rose and ran for his life to Beersheba, which belongs to Judea. And look at this. He left his servant there. Now, ladies, y'all doing a book on Elijah? How many of the ladies doing that book on Elijah? I don't think y'all gotten here yet. I took Janet's book and read chapter 19 on that book. It's more than one day. I don't know who's teaching that book. You really need to get into this. Some good stuff there. And I read that whole thing about chapter 19. And she says, we can't do life. She may not put it in those words, but she says, we cannot do life alone. And he left his servant to go out by himself. Listen, we need one another to heal. God uses us to heal one another's soul. And he left his servant and went off by himself. This buddy of mine, he was just spending a lot of time by himself. I called him and said, you cannot do that. Get out of that house. And he did. And I helped. We just cannot do this by ourselves. Now, I thought about the other side of this is that sometimes we have to be alone for God to speak to us. So there's two sides of this coin. But she suggested that he should have never left, and I like that. By the way, she is Tony Evans' daughter. If you ever heard Tony Evans preach, you know she grew up in a home that's scriptural. We cannot do life alone. God chooses to lay his hands on our soul using other people. Juniper tree. Look at verse 5, I think it is. Yes, verse 5. Look what he did. Look what he did. And he laid down and slept under a juniper tree, and behold, there was an angel touched him and said, arise and eat. He took a nap. Now, my wife is going to love this. Sometimes a nap is holy. Not a three-hour nap like she likes. That's unholy, I think. But sometimes a nap will refresh you and make you holy. I've said that wrong. Sometimes a nap is holy to refresh you. Let me get it right, okay? I don't want y'all to go out here saying something I didn't mean to say. All right, it's 4:30 in the morning. I leave my house. I'm tired. I'm early from where I'm going. I get on I-16. Anybody ever on I-16? It's bump, 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 bump. There's nothing on I-16 but bump, 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 bump. That's all there is. I get on I-16, I get down to the rest area, and I am so sleepy. Now, my wife's about to die when I tell this. So I pulled out where the truckers park, locked the doors, cracked the windows, and take a 15-minute power nap. I was good the rest of the day. Sometimes we're worn out, and we just need to rest. That is the hardest thing for me to do in my life because I'm always thinking of the next thing I need to be doing. But sometimes we just need to sit under the juniper tree and rest. There's nothing wrong with that. By the way, there's nothing wrong with saying no sometimes to all of this business that has our life in chaos. So he took a nap. He rested a little bit because he's going to go on a journey. He's sleeping. Then look what he did. And he looked, behold, at his head was bread cake baked on the hot stone in a jar of water. So he ate and drank and lay down again. I just realized Janet's a prophet because she'd do that. She'd lay down again, okay? The angel of the Lord came again a second time and touched him and said, arise and eat because the journey is too great for you. So he arose, ate and drank, and went in the strength of the food for 40 days and 40 nights to Horeb, the mountain of God. Look where he ends up. The mountain of God is where he ends up. But he also, not only did he take a nap, not only did he rest, but also he ate and drank. God prepared him. God gave him physically what he needed to go on the journey. And we make it so spiritual, we over-spiritualize everything. And sometimes God uses simple things in our life we already have. The person next to us, the recliner, the tree out back, whatever, to replenish us in order for us to handle these emotions that can overtake us. And God uses those. Then he runs to a cave. Look at verse 9. What is he doing? He's at the mount of God. He's still not wanting to face God. So there he came. Then he came to a cave and lodged there. And behold, the word of the Lord came to him and said, look at this. What are you doing, Elijah? Even at the mountain of God, he was trying to hide in a cave, but God knew exactly where he was. You think God don't know where you're at? You think God has given up on you? You think God don't care? You think I'm going to hide from God? You think your emotions are overcome you? I'm going to run from this? God knows right where you're at. He knew exactly where he was at as he hid in his cave, as he tried to hide from God, as he tried to hide and not see God. Simple things God are using. Simple things. God gave him all he needed. He didn't rebuke him. Notice that. He didn't rebuke him. He didn't give up on him. He prepared him for the journey. He refreshed him, and then he still went to the cave. But then what's interesting is this. It's when he got to that cave, listen to the question. What are you doing here, Elijah? Look how he answers it. God, I've been very zealous for the Lord, the God of your hosts, for the sons of Israel had forsaken your covenant, tore down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword. I alone am left, and they seek to take my life, and they seek my life to take it away. Is that true? He wasn't alone. What are you doing here, Elijah? God, I'm the only one left. This is more of a spiritual question. Now, keep going. And he said, go forth and stand on the mountain before God. And behold, the Lord was passing by, and a great and strong wind was rending the mountain and broken in pieces and rocks before God, but the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, a sound of a gentle blowing, a gentle voice. When Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in his mantle and he went out and stood at the entrance of the cave. Listen to what it says. And behold, a voice came to him and said, what are you doing here, Elijah? Now, I would have probably come up with a different answer by now, wouldn't you? Then he said, I have been very zealous for God, the Lord of hosts, for the sons of Israel have forsaken your covenant, tore down your altars, and killed your prophets in the sword, and I alone am left, and they seek my life to take it away. Evidently, he thought God had a hearing problem, because he gave God the same answer. God knew the answer. God knew the answer. It was more of a spiritual question than a physical question. Not where you're at physically, but God, but Elijah, why are you here spiritually? Folks, why are you where you're at spiritually? Why are you here? What is God dealing with you about? Why are you where you're at in life? Are you ready to give up? Is all this going on inside your head? Listen, two people have told me this week as I prepare for this, if I could just quit having these thoughts, if I could just quit having these thoughts. One of them's a very intelligent guy. And we do this, God, I'm the only one left. Nobody cares, God. Why are you here? And instead of making a decision on the spiritual side, we make it on those emotions that are overcoming us and overwhelming us. Why are you here? He was at Mount Horeb at this time. Now, you noticed I run right by some things, but I want to go back to it. This is the Mount of God. Right in the middle of the desert, Elijah found God waiting on him. Did you catch that? He found God waiting on him. He found grace. He found God. Look what it says. Look at verse 11. And behold, the Lord was passing by, and a great and strong wind was rending the mountain and broke it into pieces. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind is earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. But after that, the sound of a gentle blowing or a gentle voice, we try to box God in. We try to put Him in a little box and box Him in, and we think that He only speaks through all of this big stuff, when sometimes God just speaks in a little soft voice. He gave Elijah grace at this mountain. He found God waiting. And we have to put ourselves in the position before God as He waits on us. Notice, He did not enter into Elijah's make-believe world. Whoa. He didn't enter into that. What did he do? Look at verse 13. When Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in the mantle and went out to the front of the front entrance of the cave. And behold, a voice came to him saying, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" Then he said, "I am very zealous for the Lord. The Lord, the God of hosts, for the son of Israel, has forsaken your covenant, tear down your altars, killed your prophets with sword, and I alone am left, and they seek my life to take me away." So, if he's a God of grace, then what would he do? He would just say, "Hey, thoughts go away. You know, just do away with them." Does he do that? No. What did he do? Look what he did. And the Lord said to him, "Go, return your way." He sent him right back into what he was running from. Even in his grace, he didn't remove him from the situation. He just gave him the strength to go back into the situation. Oh, you say that can't happen? We've been taught all our life we just trust Jesus and He takes it all away. Really? Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, He parted the Red Sea, but He didn't move the Red Sea. Yes, we trust in Jesus. We trust Jesus, but it doesn't mean He's going to take the situation away. He believed in the lies that Satan gave him, and we believe in those lies every day. He lost some confidence. He lost some competence. He lost a purpose. He was crushed. He was down and out. Now listen to the next statement. If you have a relationship with Jesus, Satan cannot destroy you. But he can make you become despaired, depressed, and ready to give up. And you start telling your mind and thoughts that you have all of this. But he can overcome if you give that to him and walk with him. Phyllis Schreiber says this, we're modern day Elijahs. We need to be faithful, don't give up. There's work to do. Right quick, I don't have a lot of time with this in an illustration. Let me give you some takeaways. And I'm sorry I don't have these on the PowerPoint. If you want them, I'll give them to you later. I just added these this morning, and just listen to them. Just some lessons that we can take away from here. We can do as Elijah. We can focus on the chaos of life, and get our eyes off the Lord and become discouraged. If we just focus on what the chaos of everything's going on, and we can become discouraged and ready to give up. Secondly, listen to this. God does display Himself work in mighty ways. You know, what did He brought the fire down? He does do the wind, fire, the earthquake. God's mighty to do that. But listen, sometimes God speaks, in a personal relationship in a still, small voice. Thirdly, God often meets our needs, but He encourages us to examine our thoughts and our behaviors. Because that could be part of the issue. And he gives us instructions how to get out of those and assures us we're never alone. Fourth, we have to listen to God's voice and walk in obedience in our life to God's voice. And sometimes with all the chaos going on, it's hard to hear God's voice. Now, there's a lot to hearing God's voice. I hear people say, God told me to do this. Be careful with that. Because God will affirm if he told you to do that. Janet and I had a major decision. Nobody in this room knows this, I think, but her and I had a major decision a couple weeks ago. Because I'd been offered a ministry. It was in another state. It was a great opportunity. And we had to pray over it. And so we prayed together and decided to pray alone. And I forgot to tell her. I had to let them know that Monday. And so that Monday I had to text them and I told them. After I prayed about it, I felt like I should not do it and told them why. The guy affirmed it. He said, I think you're right. You need to do what just what you... That night, Janet affirmed it. She came in and said, I prayed about this. We don't need to make this move. I said, well, I'm glad you said that. I've already texted him. God will affirm you in Scripture or with somebody else about the direction you need to go, instructions. Number five, listen very carefully. Though we are humans and we are frail, God can still use us in a powerful, mighty way. 2 or 3 weeks ago, I landed at my motel, and it had been a pretty stressful week, so I decided that I would get out and get on the pavement for a few minutes. And so I changed clothes. In this particular motel I stay in, there's a subdivision behind it, and I love to walk in this subdivision. It's a subdivision. It's probably 1,300 to 1,500 square feet homes. Real quiet, real peaceful, a lot of beautiful landscaping. I like to walk through there and look at the landscaping to get some ideas that I can't afford to do at my house. But I walked through there, and it's just real nice back there. And so I was walking through this subdivision. It was just quiet, peaceful, minding my own business. I mean, I don't even know if I'd seen a person. I may have, don't remember. I got on the back side of that subdivision, and all the back side of it, there's a wooden fence stretched all the way across it. I don't know if that's to keep those folks out or keep these people in. I don't know. But that wooden fence there. So here I'm going along real quiet, not even thinking about what's about to happen. And all of a sudden, I could not see it, but it had to be one vicious dog started growling, barking, and hit that fence 2 or 3 times like that, wanting to get at me. Now, I'm not normally afraid of dogs, but I thank God there was a fence there. Because I don't think I could outrun that dog. There's an invisible enemy that will hit us. And he'll give us thoughts that we never thought about having. He'll play with our emotions till it overcomes us. And we'll become despaired. And that's what he wants us to do. And we have to build a fence to keep him from getting to us. And the first thing we need to do is to be honest with one another and with God. God, I'm hurting. God, I'm overwhelmed. I'm ready to give up. And we have to go back to what I said was a cliche. We have to trust God in a real way that he can take care of those. And in that fence, use the simple things. You know, sometimes I say, God, I'm just tired and overwhelmed, but I don't rest. If we don't rest, if you're ready to give up, you need to eat. Eating's important. You don't need to be alone. You need to talk to somebody. And we put that fence up to keep that bully out. Some of you this morning, listen, this may have just been for me. I don't know. But I doubt it. Why would God impress on my heart so that we need to hear this? And folks, he'd been doing it for 2 or 3 weeks. So there's somebody. It's okay if you're overwhelmed. Start by talking to God. Start by using those things he gives us. Father, I don't know who it is. It may just be me. It's your invitation. What else can I say? That's just in your name. Amen. Stand together as we sing. This altar is open for anything. You may just want to come pray. You may want me to pray with you. You may want to come down and some one of the deacons pray with you. You may want to pray where you're at. Come right now. Step out.